Welcome back to In Pursuit of Community with Elevate Branson. I'm your host, Brian Stallings, the CEO and founder of Elevate Branson, along with my wife, Amy, who is the volunteer coordinator here as well. Say hi, Amy.
Hello there, everybody.
Well, today you are going to be listening to the second half of our interview with Jonas Argus. Jonas, again, is the interim president and CEO for the Branson Lakes Area Chamber of Commerce and Convention and Visitors Bureau. He's also the executive director for the Taney County Partnership. And last week's episode, we talked a lot about the affordable housing issue that we currently have going on in Branson. Today, we're going to talk about some of the latest voting initiatives, the things that were on the ballot. But before we do that, we're going to get started with Jonas just by hearing a little background from him and what he was doing in the 90s. Jonas?
Early 90s, I was working at the Plantation Restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
And then
okay.
Mid-90s, I ended up working at that was family, my mom and stepdad. But mid-90s was the GM. Got to the point where, you know, those hours and the money just weren't working right. And so decided to go out on my own, worked at Alltel for a while.
Oh, that's right.
Did that. And then the opportunity to purchase the Schlotzky's franchise came about in about 1999 sometime. I had looked at that in like 96, 97. And so it came back around. So was blessed to be able to do that. Then got married, started having babies. And then that whole 70 to 80 hour work week in the restaurant industry didn't really mesh up.
Was no longer appealing.
I remember our daughter was, I think, around 6 months old or so. 6, 7, 8 months old, and I had just come home at like 2 o'clock in the morning from the Shepherd's Midnight Cruise, spitting nails about all the stuff.
Yeah.
We closed at 10, and I was getting home at 2 a.m. and yada yada yada.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Well, the reason I bring up the 90s is because if you remember, I think it was mid to late 90s, we kind of had a little chamber split going on. We had two chambers, I think, at the end
I think that goes back to the first effort on the tourism tax, the city's tourism tax, and some things there. I wasn't paying much attention to civic matters back then, but I do recall a little bit of that going on. And I think it passed, and there might have been some litigation, and then got it passed again, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, it was kind of short-lived. I remember it was a couple of years that we had two chambers kind of little infighting or whatever.
So it was two Branson chambers.
We had two Branson chambers, yeah.
Oh, gosh.
One was still Branson.
I think there was one chamber and then a wannabe chamber.
I mean, the chamber that we have now that really focused on tourism and local, and then this one that separated off was supposed to be kind of a local chamber, but it didn't last very long. And I think once new leadership got in place, things got reconciled and back together. But that's kind of my recollection of the chamber from back in the day.
Yeah.
So I just didn't know if you were involved all the way back then or not.
No. I was spending most of, if not all of my time at the Plantation Restaurant.
Well, the chamber obviously has been actively involved both in local and tourism issues for a long time.
Yeah.
Well, this year, I think it was back in May, for whatever reason, we had drag queen shows come on the on the radar for the city of Branson. And there was quite a little bit of controversy about the shows, even though for the past 20, 30 years, we've had some form of that either in our theater district in entertainment or places have had drag queen shows.
They probably didn't call them drag queen shows, or did they?
I think they did.
Oh.
Well, except for if it was part of another show where a comedian dressed up as a woman or something. But are those issues the chamber gets involved in, or do you guys like stay away from those with a 10-foot pole?
No, well, I mean, we get involved with issues that the business community wants us to get involved in when it comes to the chamber. And to be honest with you, we had no businesses wanted to get into that. So we kind of just sat on the sidelines and watched it all unfold. So
I think it was interesting because the way I was understanding the ordinance was that a current drag show really didn't rise to the level of adult entertainment. they at before they passed this ordinance, they could be held anywhere within the theater district.
Anywhere in town.
Yeah, yeah, and any place that allowed live entertainment, I guess, yeah. Right?
Well, anywhere, the way I understood it, prior to the ordinance that they just passed, it could happen anywhere. As long as there was not explicit content, then it began. Right.
As long as there was no nudity and no sexually explicit content.
Yeah, because they already had an adult entertainment, or I don't know what the correct term, on the books.
Right, a section in town, right?
Yeah, and that's why they kept, that's how they, or the way I understood it, was moved it downtown, because that's where that kind of fit in the ordinance, adult entertainment.
Well, but what I thought was interesting is that had they, let's say they'd had a drag queen show at Clay Cooper's Theater, just to pick it, or Presley's, just to pick a theater, and they had adult or they had nudity, or they had sexual implicit material, they could actually be ticketed and shut down.
Yeah, then the way that would be a violation of the ordinance. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, the way I understand it, by moving it to the downtown area with the ordinance that passed, they could actually have nudity and sexually explicit, because that is an adult entertainment district. Seems like that was counterintuitive to what they wanted.
That was kind of part of the dialogue. I was at the meeting when they final read it. I got the impression that it limited it, it made it so that you could have that type of show or entertainment in the downtown area now, but it also it banned that explicit or more sexual. That's the way I understood it.
Yeah, I think it actually allows it because of the adult entertainment district, which seems like counterintuitive what people
if that's the end result, then yeah, exactly.
Wanting, so. Yeah, there are a couple of things I felt like would have had a better chance of getting passed if they had just included not having drag queen shows in it. Like the library tax is one, right, that came about here recently. And I know some of the people that had no signs were asking people to say no to drag queens reading
there were signs that actually had pictures of, you know, say no to drag queen reading hour, which to my understanding there had never ever been
happen anyhow.
You know, at the Taney Hills Library, or would there ever be plans for that? I mean, right. so that's
why I think the library, probably their motto should have been say yes to the library tax
and no to
drag queen reading. You know,
could have,
right.
They might have had a better chance of that passing with more than 46 votes, but it passed. And so did the chamber take any stance on the library?
The chamber board did vote to endorse the library effort.
So did Elevate Branson's board. We did the same thing.
Yeah.
And I don't think there was any question from what I read, even from the people that were saying no about the library tax or the library itself. I don't think there was any question that people were saying no about a library.
No. Everybody, I think that there was just a lot of questions.
There was just a lot of confusion about the tax, I think.
So do we know where it's going to be built at? Yet?
Not yet.
I don't think they know.
No,
that
was a common question. And we heard this, you know, the last time it was on the ballot countywide, right? Where's it going to be?
Yeah.
Who's going to, you know, what's right. How big is it going to be? What's the budget?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I just happened to read some of the signs, no to a $12 million library. But if they're asking what the budget is and there's no budget, how can you assume that it's a $12 million library?
Originally the library material that came out said that a library facility in a community our size was around $12 million to build.
So there was
that's like a softball.
About.
Right.
You know.
And then they pulled that out after people got focused on the $12
million. Actually, you know, I'd be honest with you, I would have lost that bet. I would have bet that it would have been defeated.
Yeah, I would have thought so too. Because of the time of year, the August. If you don't have a primary going on, it's usually you don't have a good turnout. They actually had better turnout than what we've seen
in
the past.
14.99% for the county.
I don't know what it was for the districts.
It was a close vote.
It was close.
46.
Yeah.
And usually, when you're talking taxes, your retirees come out.
Yeah.
And they say no. So I was really surprised that it.
Well,
did pass.
So we were watching. We had a Board of Aldermen meeting that night on some marketing stuff, and you know, we were the drag show debate was the first little bit of that. So I was watching, you know, returns, and usually they'll post the absentee ballots, you know, that early, that first precinct reporting type numbers are absentee ballots. And the library just that shocked me, because it was like It was like 70-30 in favor.
Yeah, it really tightened up.
As the night went on, it got to it did never. I mean, that's where it peaked, and it came down to the very end because there was even the last precinct.
I think it tight.
Yeah, it was weird because it said that Hollister 3 had yet to report, but then when you downloaded the PDF, Hollister 3 had reported.
But then
it was like 120 something difference to the positive.
Yeah.
That last precinct was 80 some against, so the difference, but it.
What was the last precinct?
It said Hollister
3.
It wasn't
making sense.
It didn't, it was kind of, who knows. But
yeah, it really tightened up there at the end. I was surprised by that.
Yeah.
Now, you guys were involved, though, in Back the Blue, Tax the Green.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
Now, was that a chamber initiative? Or
it was a Taney County Partnership.
Taney County Partnership. Yeah. So they asked you to be involved in that, or how's
that work?
You
know, I think we offered, right?
Oh, okay.
Because if you look at, and so there's some technical things here, but all the municipalities are a member of the Taney County Partnership that had a ballot question, and obviously the county, right? Because that's how the Taney County Partnership functions, by a contract for service between the chamber and the Taney County Commission. So all are already investment members, right?
Gotcha.
Of the economic development efforts for the county. So we double checked to make sure with the Missouri Ethics Commission, since they are investors, because obviously governmental entities can't use public resources to advocate for a ballot initiative. Checked with the Ethics Commission and got clarification that once those entities had made their investment, what the partnership then chooses to do with that money is up to them. So it's no longer private funds. No longer public funds because of that. So we've thought, we've handled, a handful of ballot initiatives over the last 8-9 years. We thought, okay, well, this is one that we feel very strongly about that should happen. So we offered the county and the four cities that, hey, let us do a countywide campaign. Keep it, a simple message that covers all five entities, save money and do it in the professional manner that we did. So,
because you guys were part of the sewer.
We managed the renewal of the sewer tax.
Yeah.
So that was a renewal, so that was a little bit different, a little easier. Oh, okay. I don't want to say it's easier. They're all, they all have their challenges, you get into them.
But that was city, wasn't it?
No, that was county.
That was county.
Countywide,
as well.
Oh, okay. So the countywide Taney County Regional Sewer District. So that is a 1 cent sales tax. The only thing we did differently with that one was that we extended it 5 years. So the sunset previously had been 20 years, and we moved the sunset to 25 years.
Okay.
And the reason being, we had a cooling off period, so that gave the sewer board enough time to consider the renewal takes effect, if they wanted to do any type of municipal bonding or public bonding initiative that lasts 20, that's typically a 20-year deal.
Right.
Right. So then they're already outside of their, so if you're going to a bonding institution and say, hey, our tax is guaranteed for the next 19 and a half years, but we'd like a 20-year bond.
Right.
So we moved it out to 25 years to give them a little flexibility.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So now, but this one, though, for years or whoever, if you've been, the proponents for legalization of pot basically said, well, make it legal and tax it. It's like, okay, done. We're going to tax it. It's legal, and so we're going to tax it. So
on the other ballots for, I think it was, Hollister, Rockaway, Forsyth, maybe?
Yeah, it was Branson, Hollister, Forsyth, and Rockaway Beach.
I know that that was at least California's initial thoughts, too, was, hey, we're going to legalize marijuana, and we're going to tax the crap out of it, basically, and that's going to fund everything. And then what that ended up doing was driving the black market up.
Yeah.
And so it was actually cheaper for individuals to buy marijuana off the street than it was to go into a dispensary. But now California's got a lot more taxes than we do. But was there any concern of that?
You know, I actually,
or
to
law
be honest with you, that's one of the things that, you're going to regulate it and tax it, so you're going to drive up the cost to where demand isn't sustainable and you drive it out to the streets, right? I have a couple of acquaintances that still partake in the consumption of what somebody called the other morning was
medicinal.
The jazz cabbage is what they
heard that one.
Yeah, and so I asked the guy, and I said, you know, what's your opinion on this? And he's like, Joey, I walk into the store, I buy it, and I walk out. He goes, I'm just now getting to the point where I don't look over my shoulder anymore. I said, so, you know, you're going to basically possibly add 12% to your transaction over what you're doing now, right? Because the state's putting on 6%, mm-hmm. the county and this. And that's another thing that's got to be resolved if the county can stack on top of the city. That's not done yet. He's like, I don't care. He goes, to me, it's a convenience fee. I'm like, convenience fee? He goes, yes. I walk into the store, I buy it, and I walk out. I don't have to call and make some seedy arrangement to meet in some back alley or parking lot somewhere, or
yeah.
you know.
Yeah,
and he goes, the product is better. He goes, and you know, there's a higher degree of lack of concern for what else is in there, right? Right.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. because of that, he goes, you can tax it whenever you want.
I just heard recently too that the last, I think it was MasterCard, is the last credit card company now that has pulled out from being able to pay with a credit card
because
of the federal laws.
Yeah.
And it was funny. So individual stating the process was like, it was like 89. Let me see how it was like $89 for him to buy some of this marijuana. So you could do it with a debit card. You couldn't do it with a credit card. But then they could only take, somehow due to the law, I don't know what state it was in, but a round amount. So they actually charged him, or he gave them, how would that go? $90 was what the transaction ended up being, but he had to give them change back. It was because of the way the whole law was and the way of transferring money and stuff. It was such a screwy deal. It's like at this point we have so many states doing it. We just need to legalize.
That's the issue. So the whole thing for us was, you know, all four cities dedicated theirs to law enforcement, 100%. You know, back the blue tax agreement. And our justification for this county was that the county still funds a lot of public safety through the general fund at the county level. Now, they just got done passing, you know, a couple years ago, public safety tax. So, you know, it's about compliance, education, and enforcement. That's kind of the message we took. You know, I shared the story about, you know, DARE officers and resource officers, you know, talking to kids about, because the one thing that concerns me about this whole thing is the availability is gonna increase, right? It's gonna be way easier if you're an underage person and you have made up your mind that you're gonna go get some marijuana. It's gonna be easier to get it now,
right?
Right, and I that's
and
the
in
kinda,
all different forms.
Yeah, exactly. And I kind of shared my story, not my story, but you know, growing up here as a kid, right? If you didn't have somebody that was willing to go buy you a 12-pack, right? All you had to do was drive to the Arkansas state line, wait 2 minutes for an Arkansas tag to pull up mm-hmm. around the corner and go up and say, hey, I'll buy you your 12-pack if you buy me mine. And you didn't take very long.
Right.
I mean, it's a short drive down there. So
so
I think the same thing with this, you know, it's the education of young people and all that. That's the one that concerns me, having kids.
Yeah.
Geez, I never thought of that when I was a teenager. Of I'll buy you yours if you, I'll pay for
well,
yours.
Well, no,
if you buy
but
mine.
It, you know, with the key there was that Boone County was dry,
right?
So those folks had to come up. They were driving a long way themselves to come up to Rapid Roberts at the state line, and so they were a little bit more motivated, right? So that enticement of hey, I just drove all this way and I'm going to get my 12 pack for free. You got it,
it's
kid.
Even better, right?
Jonas was a businessman from
the
very get go.
No. I'm not saying it was me. I just knew. I had a friend.
Well, thanks for sharing with us, Jonas. I'm not going to share some of my childhood friend experiences. I think you covered that really well. We know now your circle of friends that you grew up with and the way that you were able to get beer underage. I hope Police Chief Schmidt is aware of that process.
Yeah, I don't really think your friends were any different from the stories I've heard about you, Brian.
Well, in Kansas, I grew up in Kansas. Right. At that time, the legal drinking limit was 18.
Okay.
So we didn't have to run to the border.
When did you start drinking?
The legal limit in Kansas was 18.
Okay.
All right, moving on. Talk about some things that are coming up here at Elevate Branson. We've got our mentor orientation on August 28th. You've heard us talk about being a mentor for our Elevate Work program, and maybe you've thought about that and like, I wonder what's involved in being a mentor. You can come on August 28th and you can find out. We won't commit you until you sign on the dotted line. So just showing up doesn't commit you to anything, but you can come and find out. I will tell you, and Amy will do this as well, that when you become a mentor, you actually get to experience life transformation in 9 weeks. You get to see it. So think about all the Sundays that you might be sitting in a pew in church hoping to see somebody's life radically changed. You can actually see that happen in 9 weeks in our Elevate Work program.
Which is quite amazing, because when we first started this, I was very skeptical that you would see much change in such a short period of time. But we definitely do see that, and it is really wonderful to be a part of that.
Now, before that mentor orientation on August 28th, we actually have going on August 25th, an SBA, or Small Business Administration, is putting on a workshop here at Elevate. It's a luncheon from 11:30 to 1. It's on a Friday, so it's a great day to get out of the office. You can come and grab lunch here. There's a small fee for that. But you can actually find ways to better your business and get access to the financial resources that you might need to expand through the SBA. And that's happening here on the 25th. Again, it's a Friday. You need to register for that event, and you can do that on our website by going to the Elevate Entrepreneurs page. But this is a great program. If you've ever thought about starting your own business or having a side hustle and you need access to capital. Now, interesting enough, Amy, back in the 90s, I had a pizza shop. And I was actually a beneficiary of an SBA loan. That's how I was able to get the capital to open that business.
I did not know that.
So it's a great program. Typically, the interest rates are better. There's just you have somebody that just kind of works with you through the process. And so I would really highly encourage you to come on that Friday and hear everything that they have to offer. And then, man, scooters are exploding right now. So we are having scooter classes almost every week. And so if you are needing access to a scooter, you will want to register for class as soon as possible, because they typically fill up and then you'd have to wait another week. So we've got lots of things happening here at Elevate. After Labor Day, we'll be starting our after-school program. So lots of programs and services getting ready just to fire back up. So come get involved and find out what's new. Well, in staying kind of with Jonas and talking about the voting issues on the ballot, it's Wacky Wednesday News Day. And so we wanted to talk about some of the different voting things around the country that come up. And actually, in three states, there are no polling places anymore. In Colorado, Washington, and Oregon, everybody can vote by mail, which decreases the cost of elections and increases the number of people who participate in elections. Probably increases the amount of fraud, too, I bet. But
yeah,
interesting, and coincidentally, all three of those states have legalized marijuana. So I don't know. There might be a tie there.
Maybe.
In North Dakota, you don't even have to register to vote. I don't know what could go wrong with that. If you live in North Dakota, you just vote.
So you could vote like 4 or 5 times and nobody would.
I don't know. I don't know how that works. The only assumption I have is that the reason they don't make you register to vote is because there's only a few dozen people that actually live in North Dakota. I mean, I don't know why.
I'm not sure if that's accurate either.
I mean, it's so cold up there. I don't know why people would live there.
That is strange, though.
But in Nevada, there's actually what they call pop-up early voting locations. So instead of going to a polling place on a polling day, like here in Branson, where you might go to the Presbyterian Church or the school or the Methodist Church, you might just be going to the mall one day, and all of a sudden you walk through the middle of the mall, and boom, there's a pop-up voting place right in the middle of the mall. They say this is one reason why over 60% of people in Nevada vote early.
So I wonder how early they start popping up.
I don't know, but that's not a bad idea it was as long as it was monitored and registered and in a short time frame, because you know, sometimes people can campaign right up to voting day. So
yeah, it'd be great to put it like at the movie theater.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to do it too early though, I wouldn't think.
Restaurants.
And then of course online voting registration has exploded a lot recently. And now over half of the states allow you to register to vote on the internet as long as you have a driver's license. But in 2015, no states automatically registered you to vote when you got a driver's license or updated your driver's license, which is kind of odd. Like, that would have been a perfect time to register somebody. But in the last 3 years, 13 states now will automatically register you to vote when you get your driver's license. There are some people who think that if you don't register, you don't get jury duty. And apparently that's not true. That's not where they get their jury duty list.
Yep.
I got my notice for jury duty recently, and
that's
so
right.
Be interesting to see how that all plays out. And finally, there is one place where you can't register online, you don't get automatically registered, and you don't even get to register by mail. In New Hampshire, you have to take your physical body to your town clerk's office to register in person. Now, that would be very inconvenient, I think, in our day and age. Yet, it would also really probably control voter fraud, right? Because you have to physically be there. So
yeah, we live in such a culture of convenience. I wonder what their voting stats are in New Hampshire.
Yeah, I'd be curious to know what their turnout is and actually what percentage of the residents are actually registered to vote. But there may not be a whole lot to do in New Hampshire, so who knows?
I don't know.
Well, today is $1 Wednesday. Oh, that's our wacky news, by the way. I'm wrapping that up. Our wacky Wednesday news
wacky
to go
Wednesday
with.
Wrap up.
Yep. Wacky Newsday wap Wednesday up. Wap up. Wap. Wapping. Well, wapping with wacky Wednesday woos.
All right. On to the next.
All right. So today is One Waller Wednesday.
Oh, God. You got to know when to say when.
So $1 Wednesday is just a day to remind you to donate. You know, a lot of times people want to give to an organization. We suggest Elevate Branson, since you're listening to this podcast. But we often don't get around to it. And so this is our reminder. It's Wednesday. You can donate as little as a dollar or put as many digits behind that dollar as you want. 6 or 7 would be fine. And so just go to elevatebranson.org, click on the Donate tab, and donate today while you're listening to this podcast. We also want to bring your scripture of the week. Amy, have you got our scripture of the week?
I do. This is one of my all-time favorites. It's in Ezekiel 36, verse 26, and it says, "I will give you a new heart and put a new spirit in you. I will remove from you your heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh." Well, you know, quite frankly, sometimes I have a heart of stone, and so this gives me a lot of hope and encouragement that I don't have to stay stuck there. God can give me a heart of flesh.
I'm going to say that the next time you say something to me about not washing my dishes. So you have a heart of stone. Let's pray God gives you a heart of flesh.
That won't work.
Well, We are still trying to figure out the process because, quite frankly, you guys aren't giving us a lot of suggestions here on our listener names. So we need you to tell us how you would like to decide your group name. Now, we could send that out through an email or we could do a Facebook poll. There's lots of different ways we could do this. But remember, our four nominated names right now are the Elevators, the Hooligans, the Do-Gooders, and the Big Dreamers. We need to know how to reference you as our listeners. Do we call you the Elevate Branson Elevators, the Elevate Branson Hooligans, the Elevate Branson Do-Gooders, or the Elevate Branson Big Dreamers? So please send your emails, text messages, call-ins, voicemails, and let us know how you would like to be surveyed for that. Now, speaking of calling in or writing in, we have some great questions this week. So it's interesting because I've seen some activity on Facebook here recently about the city and affordable housing because we had all the stuff about the library and the drag queens and all this kind of stuff. So Rich was on Facebook. He said, is it the city of Branson's responsibility to provide affordable housing? That's a great question, Rich. I think as you heard Jonas say last week, it's a community responsibility. So I don't think it's one entity. I think it's all our entities combined that is going to do that. It's going to take private public partnerships to bring affordable housing. Yes, the city is very instrumental in that, in some rezoning and maybe some waiving of some fees and things like that. But it's going to take all of us as a community to really play a part in that. And then Jesse on Facebook asked, should the city of Branson limit nightly rentals such as Airbnbs? Now, I'm an Airbnb proponent. Amy and I, we take advantage of Airbnbs when we travel. I do think there is some responsibility, and again, it's a partnership. I think that one of the challenges that we have with Airbnbs is that they may not pay the appropriate lodging or sales taxes that a normal hotel or motel is required to pay. And I don't think that's an equal playing field. I think that they need to be paying those fees. But I don't think it's the city's responsibility to tell individuals what kind of business they can or cannot have. I think when you look at neighborhoods, neighborhoods can do that with their HOAs. They can say, you know, we aren't going to have nightly rentals in this neighborhood. The other part of this, I think, that comes back to responsibility of all of us playing a part in affordable housing is we saw houses that were in that $150,000 to $200,000 range get sold rather quickly on the market for Airbnbs or VRBOs. And that pulled inventory from the local workforce that really needed affordable housing. And so at some point, maybe our responsibility as a community is to look past that investment opportunity to provide that housing for our local workforce. And then, any thoughts on that, Amy?
No, I think that's true. I mean, I think the housing situation or problems that we have are very far-reaching. It's for a lot of different types of people that live here. It's not just for, you know, those who work in our restaurants and our motels and stuff, but it's for young families starting out. It's for older couples that are on a limited income. It's for just a lot of different people. And so it's a community-wide situation that we really all need to be concerned about and want to be a part of the solution.
Now, this last question comes from, if you've been listening to this podcast, it's a regular subscriber that writes in every week. D. Toddy Squeeman, I'd like to meet him someday, but he has been a faithful follower of our podcast and sends us a question every week. He says, I'm a local that's currently employed and needs transportation, but my employer won't become an Elevate business partner. how can I get a scooter? Well, D-Toddy Squeeman, I am glad you asked because we have just rolled out our rental program to our local workforce. So a lot of the same qualifications. You still have to be employed. You have to be able to show that you can pay the rental on a scooter. It is a 49cc, so the larger scooters are still only available for our business partner employees. But what's great about this is it's short term. So let's say the transmission falls out of your car and your car is going to be in the shop 2 weeks. You could rent a scooter for 2 weeks is all. It's $75 a week if you want to rent it short term. It's $65 a week if you'll rent it by the month. And if you're a college student or you are a J-1 worker, it's only $50 a week. Now, there are some other caveats to this. I mean, you still have to go through scooter school. You still have to have a valid driver's license. So you have to have a valid driver's license. If you had four DUIs and your driver's license has been taken away, having a 49cc scooter doesn't alleviate the fact that you have to have a valid driver's license. Now, your liability insurance is still included, and we still provide a helmet with that. So it's a great opportunity. This is just now rolling out. So if you want more information, be sure to call our Elevate Rides at 417-295-7575 or go to our website at elevatebranson.org. What do you think about that, Amy, making those rentals available to our locals?
Oh, it's exciting. It's exciting. We have people coming in every day now that have learned about how we've changed that up a little bit, and they are very excited. And every time I go somewhere, I see our scooters out there. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, we've got over 40, I think, now on the road.
That's a lot for our
area. We have a few more rentals, and J-1s are getting ready to leave, and we thought, you know what? I think we could offer these to our local workforce, and it was a great idea. And so we want to help provide a little bit of transportation for our workforce. Again, I would encourage your employers to become business partners with us because you get access to a larger scooter. It's significantly cheaper, and the scooter is yours to keep.
It's an ownership program.
Yeah, it's an ownership program. So, all right. Well, you have been listening to Elevate Branson's In Pursuit of Community podcast, and we look forward to talking to you again next week.